Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So all that buzz last month about the first woman speaker? Well, Nancy Pelosi was just a little bit behind my first guest this morning. Christine Quinn became the first woman speaker of the New York City Council last year. Just like the mayor, the council speaker gives a State of the City speech every year. Did you know that? And Quinn gave hers last Thursday and turned a lot of heads with some of her proposals, like a tax credit for middle-class renters, not just property owners, and for how, well, mayoral she appeared to many people. She's also in the news this week for actually turning down legal campaign donations from lobbyists. City Council Speaker Christine Quinn joins me now. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And we'll open up the phones wide in this segment. New York City residents, speak to your speaker. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. And let's begin with your tax credit for renters. Who would qualify and how would it work?
It would cover about 1.1 million renters. And unfortunately, we couldn't do all renters in this proposal. We would eventually like to do that, but there's so many renters, it's hard to do that all in one fell swoop because of the budget impact. The income levels are different depending on if you're single or how many kids you have. Roughly, it's people say between rough numbers, people should check between $45,000 and up to about $75,000, $80,000. The idea here is that after September 11th, we had to raise taxes. And we said to people, when times are better, we'll take your taxes down because we were in such a tough spot. And we started to do that. The mayor's done that with his $400 rebate for property owners. We're going to do that further when we take the property tax rate down this spring. But what people don't always realize, even renters, is that renters pay property taxes just like homeowners. What happens is landlords and the Rent Guidelines Board pass that along to renters when they raise their rents. So the Rent Guidelines Board, right after we raised taxes, landlord after landlord after landlord said, give it to us. The rent's never going down when property taxes go down. So this is a way where once we get this passed into law, you'll file your taxes. You'll prove you're a renter. You'll get a $300 credit.
It's not just for rent-stabilized renters. It's for any renters in those income categories.
Correct.
But it assumes, and you almost just said it, that landlords do not set market rates in good faith, that if their property taxes go up, they raise rents. But if their property taxes go down, they don't lower rents.
Well, you know, the way rents get raised and set in the city of New York is through a very crazy process, the Rent Guidelines Board. And the Rent Guidelines Board, once they put rents up, never put them down. So, you know, you could argue it's beyond the landlord's control, though certainly landlords aren't going into the Rent Guidelines Board ever asking for it to go down. So it's certainly a process. I've always said this, the Rent Guidelines Board, one that is skewed way against tenants, and we need to compensate for that reality.
You also proposed a plan to help more New Yorkers afford to buy homes with new down payment and closing cost assistance. Again, who would qualify and for how much assistance?
Right now, there's programs in the city and federal programs that do matching on deposits, closing costs, down payments, et cetera, for people up to $57,000, which is great. Except in New York, given how expensive it is, there's people who make more than that who want to be homeowners and can't. We would take it up to $92,000 and kind of create a $57,000 to $92,000 bracket there, a more middle class bracket to help middle class folks become homeowners. We would match. They'd have to have their own money, but we would match the closing costs, the deposit costs, down payment costs, things like that to help connect people to home ownership opportunities.
When you say match the down payment costs could be thousands of dollars. Well, you're talking about the actual down payment?
It would be usually how it works, and we have to work out the specifics, is you do a 50-50 match, a government match there to help close the gap between what somebody might have and what it might cost.
So if somebody wanted to put $20,000 down on a home, the city would give them another $20,000?
You know, you have to work out the details. Potentially, you know, it depends on, it has to be a first-time home. We're not buying anybody a beach house in Rockaway.
This is a first-time home.
You have to be able to prove to the city that you can make your monthly payment. And you have to also prove that you, without this support from the city, couldn't get to become a homeowner.
New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, my guest on WNYC. We can take your phone calls and emails for her. You like the idea of a tax credit for renters? Landlords, fair to you, 212-433. I guess it's not coming out of your pocket, right? 212-433-9692 or email Brian Larishow at WNYC.org. Do you have a position on the proposed Starrett City sale
Yes.
before we get off housing?
I think this sale needs to be stopped. You know, the owners of Starrett City want to sell it. That's their right. So eventually, looks like it'll get sold. But this particular deal, the way it is on the table right now, A, it is not going to preserve affordability. I don't care what anybody says. B, there's real questions about whether the people who want to buy Starrett City are up to the job, given their past performances. I mean, look at what the Attorney General Cuomo came out with over the weekend. So this has to stop. And I've stood with our local council member, Charles Barron, and also Senator Chuck Schumer at a press conference urging HUD to block the sale. Because the good thing in here, which is different than Stuyvesant Town, is the Federal Housing Department can stop this sale.
Right. But I was just going to ask you if you have a similar position on Stuyvesant Town and Peter Cooper Village as you do on this.
Well, we were, my office working with Councilmember Dan Garodnick, were very, very active in helping the Tenants Association attempt to buy Stuytown Peter Cooper. We spoke out very broadly that we really wanted them to be able to bid and buy.
But it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. There's no governmental way to block the sale of Stuytown Peter Cooper. We were extraordinarily disappointed that the Tenants Association bid didn't end up taking the day, but there's
but
no way to block
it. But you think there
was
nothing government? I want to play you a clip of Governor Spitzer. Put on your headphones
okay.
So you can hear this. Governor Spitzer on this show during the campaign last October talking about the Stuytown sale, and this really surprised me.
I know that the Tishman Speyer Company is a great tenant and participant in the New York real estate community. They are very interested in the long-term economic success of New York City, which means they have a long-term interest in keeping the middle class here. So I am confident that they will handle the situation with great sensitivity.
Why think that that would be the case? Why wouldn't they seek, like most companies would, to make as much profit as they can, to raise the rents as high as they can?
They understand Stuytown and Peter Cooper are middle class enclaves. I don't think they will do anything untoward or try to force people out. That is simply not the nature of Jerry Speier, who is a very fine, upstanding individual.
So, Speaker Christine Quinn, that isn't just the governor saying, we don't have the governmental authority to stop this sale. He's expressing faith in the owners, despite the market.
One thing that is clear in Stuytown Peter Cooper is that the units there will end, are in, once they're out of, the other programs will end up in rent stabilization. So how quickly the rents can get raised will be within the confines of what the law allows. Now, that law, unfortunately, in my opinion, has been eroded in the past 10 years. So it'll go up quicker than we would have liked because of vacancy and high rent decontrol. But they are, once they get out of the other programs, within that model. So they can't really price gouge or anything like that because they have to stay within rent stabilization. I think the governor does have a very fair point, though, in that the Tishman Speyer Company certainly has a different record than the folks in Brooklyn who are looking to buy Starrett City. But there's no way or no two ways about it. I would have much preferred the Tenants Association bought the building because then we could have really talked about once had to not just go into rent stabilization, but move the units into a longer term affordable model. Because the problem isn't just the person who lives there today. It's that once you get into the higher rent decontrol, we're going to lose them.
That's
for
the
10
problem.
Years away.
Because of vacancy decontrol,
exactly.
Almost any apartment, in fact, every apartment for
eventually.
The last few years to go vacant in Cooper Village and Stuytown has already been lost to rent stabilization. That'll continue to happen, even would have under the old owners. But Ellen in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Speaker Quinn. You're a landlord?
Yes, I am. Hi,
Ellen.
I was wondering if you were working to equalize the real estate taxes for small owners of buildings, especially the rent-controlled and rent-regulated buildings, Class 2, it's called, with 4 to 9 apartments. I have extremely high taxes. I work many hours, and my husband does 2 to work and maintain the building. We get 8% increase every year automatically in taxes. I'm up to 32%. Of my rental income is is my real estate taxes now. It's extremely high, and it's just totally taking away any kind of able to really maintain the building. We get very, very small increases in rent on our tenants. As you know, the rent control, rent stabilized tenants get very small increases. And I'm
Helen. Let me get you an answer, yeah. Speaker Quinn.
Let me say two things. One, the property tax rate cut that the mayor and the council are going to do this spring will bring you some relief. It'll probably be about 5%. So that'll bring you some relief on your property taxes. But you raise a bigger point, which is that class one properties are 1, 2, 3 family homes. Class two are multi-unit residentials and co-ops and condos. And for a very, very long time, it's been clear that class two pays a much higher rate than class one. And something we're all going to have to do in government is we've tried before but never successfully, go back to the drawing board and find a way to really equalize property taxes between class one and class two. We want to try to find a way to do it, though, that doesn't roll it all over onto class one, which wouldn't be fair to them. So you raise a problem that's been out there for a long time that we haven't made enough headway in that we really need to.
Ellen, thank you for your call and good luck. All right, ready to be challenged via email?
Okay.
Here's an email from a listener who says, news flash for Ms. Quinn, renters do not pay property taxes. Why compensate renters for taxes they aren't paying? Yes, the cost of taxes is included in the cost of the rent, but it's far, far less than it would be if it were a co-op or condo. Get your facts straight and stop pandering.
Well, the emailer has a very good point, again, the same one Ellen did, about co-op and condo owners paying too high a tax rate. That's right, and we have to do something about it. But they aren't just simply wrong about the property taxes. I mean, all you need to do is go back to the 2003-2004 Rent Guidelines Board and see landlord after landlord saying, make the rent increases higher this year because of the property taxes. The formula at the Rent Guidelines Board allows for the property taxes to be passed along, and they absolutely are. That doesn't take away the burden on co-op and condo owners, and they have, co-op and condo owners, been benefiting from the $400 property tax rebate, as 1, 2, and 3 family homeowners have too. So this is a way to just recognize that co-op and condo owners sacrificed, 1 and 2 family homeowners did, but so did renters.
Adama on Staten Island. You're on WNYC with City Council Speaker Christine Quinn.
Yeah, hi. Hi. Good morning, Brian. Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question for your guest. How will the state come up with some kind of help for low-income families, somebody like me? I live in a project, and when you look around nearby the project, they're building houses over 400 to 500,000. As a low-income person like me, how will somebody afford to buy a house like that? Because I have a friend that bought a house. And actually, when you open his refrigerator, you can only find water because he's choked.
Well, right. Adama is trying to live the American dream, right. The New York dream. He's an immigrant, obviously, lives in the projects, wants to move. He's dying to move up to home ownership. You can hear it in his voice. But everything in his neighborhood is $500,000.
One of the things when I gave my speech last week, my State of the City speech, was the problem you're talking about is exactly one of the things we were trying to focus in on. You know, we want to expand opportunities for New Yorkers like yourself and your family to get to become homeowners. Because one of the things we all know is that the best thing you can do to help neighborhoods is to have people put down roots and really commit to a neighborhood. And a great way to do that is through home ownership. That's why one of the things we're calling for is an expansion of the city's programs to help people like yourself buy homes. And we're going to do that through raising the income level a little higher. Right now, if you make $57,000, that's the highest you can make to get help from the city in us giving you money to help you with your down payment and closing costs. We're going to expand that program and hopefully help folks like yourself buy more homes on Staten Island and in the other 4 boroughs as well.
Let's walk through for just a second, if he's still there. Adama, are you still there? Let's take you as an example for just a second, if you're willing to do this, to see if the new home buyers assistance proposal from Speaker Quinn would help you. If you're willing to say, how much money do you make? What kind of a home do you think you could buy?
Brian, over 2 years now, I'm a cab driver. I've been trying, you know, if I could, you know, be able maybe to come out with some kind of down payment. But the whole issue is, you know, paying the taxes and the bills is the killer. Because I'm just, you know, trying to see if I can be able to even grab like 2-bedroom house. Right. You know, not like something big.
Yeah.
Just to start.
Well, let me just say two things. I mean, well, let me say three things. One is I hope that if we take the program we're trying to create, we're calling it ROOF, the Renters to Owners Opportunity Fund, which will give more home ownership options to New Yorkers. If you take that and the property tax cut we're going to put through this year together, hopefully that will help you be able to afford a home. And also, if you want to give my office a ring, our new program doesn't exist yet, but we're happy to work with you to take you through the programs that now exist and then tell you what the future model will look like so you could do some planning. And if that would be helpful, I'd suggest you call my office at 212-788-7210 and ask for Barbara or Josh. Don't call right this second because I got to tell them to expect your call, but call this afternoon and ask for Barbara or Josh, and we'll see if there's a way we can connect you to the existing programs or tell you what's coming and you could plan ahead.
212-788-7210.
Yes.
And Adama, if you do that, I'd love to hear back from you.
Sure, I will, Brian. Thank you very much for helping me this week.
Thank you very much for your call. All right, we'll continue in a minute with Speaker Quinn. A lot more to talk about, including her decision not to accept campaign donations from lobbyists. We already have a caller thinking that's a bad idea. Contrast her position on how New York is right now for the middle class to that of the mayor and more. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My guest is Christine Quinn, the Speaker of the New York City Council. She gave a State of the City address on Thursday. Yes, the Speaker gets to give one in addition to the Mayor. And a little different from the Mayor's in tone and in substance. It's got a lot of proposals in it. We'll talk about some more of those as we go. We'll find out about her campaign finance personal practices, never mind proposals, whether she's running for mayor maybe in 2009. A lot of people think she is. A lot of people think she should. And more of your phone calls at 212-433-WNYC. That caller was from Staten Island. And foreclosures were up 18% in the city last year, almost 50% on Staten Island. What does that tell you about the pressures on middle class residents of New York in general?
Well, I think it tells us two things. One, as we talked about in the speech last year, the pressures on middle class New Yorkers are extraordinary, and people are really getting squeezed, and we need to recognize that and do everything we can to try to support them and keep both the middle class in the city and folks like the caller who want to be in the middle class, who are striving to get there, to make sure we facilitate that happening and keep them here. But the other thing is we need to recognize that, sadly, there are people out there who prey on people like the middle class when they're in a squeeze. And that's a lot of what's happening here as well, is that we have people out there giving unscrupulous loans, bad lending advice, bad mortgages. One of the things, it didn't end up in my speech, but that we are want to do as part of our effort to expand home ownership options is also expand credit and mortgage counseling out there. So if you were to get a loan through the city, we would require that you went through a program to make sure you didn't end up with a bad mortgage.
But you also told me during the break that hunger is rising faster on Staten Island than any other borough, largely because of the squeeze on middle-class homeowners. But is this indicative of your larger message in the speech? You said the rising tide in New York doesn't lift all boats. It pushes some of them, too many of them, out into the Atlantic Ocean. So judging from your two State of the City speeches, that is yours and the mayor's, the New York you see is less middle-class friendly right now than the one Mayor Bloomberg sees. How much is that your message?
Well, I think my message is this is a little complicated in a way. My message is the city's doing well, really well, and that's great, and I'm extraordinarily optimistic about the future of the city. But at the same time, the middle class is struggling. Now, the problems for the middle class, the problem isn't that some businesses are doing too well, right? And we want real estate to do less well or something like that. That's not going to trickle down in that way. We want the folks, Wall Street, Sotheby's, keep doing well. It brings a lot of money into our budget. It's a good thing. But we need to recognize that there is also the middle class in the city, and we need to not get distracted by how well things are doing and think that means everyone is doing well. Now, the good thing is, when you're in a period of fiscal boom like we are now, it's an opportunity where you can stop, focus on something like helping the middle class and make it happen, because we're lucky enough to have resources in the budget and an opportunity where we can build connections with the sectors in the city that are doing well and create more opportunities.
Campaign finance. New York Post reported yesterday that you are refusing to take donations from many lobbyists. True?
Well, refusing is such a harsh word. We decided, my campaign and I, that since we're doing a lot of work legislatively around lobbying reform and campaign finance, that it would be appropriate for me just to personally decide not to take money from individuals who are third-party lobbyists, people who are registered lobbyists with the city clerk. And some of them have offered to give me money, which is very generous and kind, and we've hopefully politely said no thank you and sent the checks back.
That's refused.
It is, but politely refused.
So here's a caller who does not think that is such a good idea. Robert in Manhattan, you're on WNYC, right, Robert?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Great show, Brian.
Thank you.
Speaker Quinn, first of all, I think in an ideal world, it's laudable that we not have campaign contributions dictating access and the like, but we don't live in an ideal world. And so my concerns is this, that where lobbyists in the past have bundled and have given campaign contributions, in the last 5-7 years or so, both the city's lobbying registration and campaign finance laws, as well as the state's, have allowed the public rivals and interests to monitor who's giving what, who's giving what to whom, who has access. And it strikes me that looking at campaign contributions in isolation from the legislation that I believe that certainly the mayor champions, I don't know if you do, in which people under contract with the city are prohibited from giving campaign contributions.
You are for that,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And the like. And this mayor's penchant for sole source contracts, that what we're going to be getting in terms of the democratic fabric is that large institutions who, in effect, by virtue of the hundreds if not thousands of workers that they have as constituents or their general influence in the commercial sector.
This is the longest sentence I've ever heard. And what's amazing is it's all grammatically correct. But I have to jump in because I get your point. He's saying if you take campaign finance out of the lobbyists' hands, prohibit them from going out and bundling a lot of small donations from a lot of people and then giving them to you in their name, then campaign finance is going to be left to the corporations, the larger corporations in general, and those with interest in doing business with the city.
Let me say a couple things about that. One, my decision not to take money from third-party lobbies is a personal decision. That's not the law. The law allows people to do that with disclosure. The mayor has called for all of us in city government to look at the issue of pay-to-play, how people who do business with the city, whether they should be allowed to give money, how much, et cetera, et cetera. And we are working aggressively and hope to, by the end of this month, beginning of next month, have a very comprehensive campaign finance reform legislation, which will restrict, it may not eliminate, but restrict the ability of people who do business with the city to give money. Now, the caller, I think, raises a good point in that campaign finance is complicated. And you can't say just preventing lobbyists from giving to me is the answer. It's not the answer. The answer is about full disclosure and sunlight being into the process so people, as the caller say, can see who gives what and what happens. Two, recognizing that there are lots of ways to do business and influence the city and trying to capture as many of those as we can when we define pay to play. And also to make sure that anytime people bundle, that they have to disclose that they did that, as the caller said, so people then can draw whatever conclusion they want from it. But just focusing on third-party lobbyists, you're right, isn't the whole answer. And we have done and are going to continue in the next few weeks and months to do a lot more than that, that I hope will hit the vast majority of what the caller was referencing.
And Robert, thank you for your call. But one could argue that the much bigger problem is not the outside money coming into the city right now. That may be a problem in Albany or in Washington, but the much bigger problem is super rich individuals like Mayor Bloomberg, who can just buy their way out of the whole system like he did. Now, he's been a good mayor by most people's judgment, but should that make us soft on the system that enables the super rich to maybe buy their way past you in a 2009 campaign?
You know, one of the things that I've raised as a concern and we're looking at in our campaign finance reform is I'm less concerned about the super rich coming in. What I'm more concerned about is us having made is the potential of us making the campaign finance system so complicated and onerous that people might, who might not be super rich but have enough rent money to raise their own funds to become a council member or, say, a borough president or something, lower levels, that they say, you know what? Forget this campaign finance. It's too complicated. That's what's happening with the folks who are running for president of the United States. They've all opted out of campaign finance. So we need to keep that reality of candidate participation in mind and fairness to candidates as well as fairness to the public when we're reforming campaign finance, which we're doing now. Because if everybody opts out, you could have a great system. But if ain't nobody in it, it's dead.
Speaker of the City Council, Christine Quinn, my guest on WNYC. Coming up in about 10 minutes, John Amici, the first NBA player, former NBA player now, ever to come out as gay. John Amici in 10 minutes. The mayor did not mention the Sean Bell shooting explicitly in his State of the City address. You did. What are you thinking about the case?
Well, I think what I said in my speech was that is two things. One, that we have a great police department, and we're very lucky that they've made this the safest big city in the world. And it would be great. We wish that every time anybody saw a police officer or a squad car, they felt safe. That isn't the case. And we need to recognize that reality and do something about it. You know, some of the editorial boards out there have criticized the council for holding hearings and town hall meetings on the topic. But we are going to continue ahead with our oversight on this issue to try to improve the police department to make it even better. On the case specifically, I have a lot of faith in the Queens district attorney. I think he's an outstanding district attorney, and I have full faith that he will bring justice to this case.
Do you have a position on the stop and frisk policy? So many stops in recent years, 500,000 last year, but with only a 10% arrest rate coming from those stops, and yet it's aimed at one of the biggest public safety problems, getting guns off the street. Right. So where do you stand on stop and frisk?
Well, we're going to be doing a thorough analysis of all of the data we got. You know, it took us a long time, way too long, to get that data out of the police department. And we're also going to be trying to address that with the police department.
Do you think, by the way, that the commissioner was purposely withholding? That was a post Amadou Diallo reform.
Yes.
That they were supposed to report the number of stops and frisks. They say it was just getting the paperwork in order. Do you believe that?
I think it very well may have been just about getting the paperwork in order. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what it was, because the law says it's supposed to be given an X period of time. And we have to find a way. If it is about the cumbersomeness, you know what I mean, how tough it is to get, I can't get that word out.
Cumbersome.
Thank you. Nature of the paperwork. That's okay. Then we need to note that. And then in the budget, we need to give them more administrative staff or more computer staff or whatever. But whatever it is, we need to fix it.
What about the policy?
Well, we need to review all of this data. And it's huge at this point, which is part of the problem with getting it so late, to really better understand what we're seeing in it, to then decide if changes need to be made and if they need to be made, what they are. But I can't really right now tell you, stop it, keep it going, change it this way, because my staff and I haven't reviewed the data.
You haven't concluded yet whether there's profiling.
We need to look at that data, and I hate to rush to judgment on these things, because then you change a policy, and it might not have been the best way to change it.
Between Sean Bell and stop and frisk questions and the profiling and other activities, wasn't racial profiling, but other kind of political profiling, really, and other things that are still emerging that went on during the Republican convention, are you losing confidence at all in Commissioner Kelly?
I have not lost confidence in Ray Kelly. I mean, I think Ray Kelly is a very, very good police commissioner, and I hope that he continues doing the job as well as he's been doing it. I've not lost faith in him.
Let me touch base with you on a couple of things in the news today. A proposal in city council for voting rights for non-citizen legal immigrants. Legal immigrants, but who have not yet attained citizenship. Are you for it?
I'm not for that proposal, because one of the things about that proposal, it's not just for people who might want to become citizens. It's for people who have said they want to be in the United States, but they don't want to be citizens, which is great. And that those folks add a tremendous amount to the city of New York. But I'm not sure that it's appropriate to be extending voting rights the way that Councilmember Barron's proposal lays out.
Barron quotes a historian who says non-citizens had this right in American history until 1926. So Councilman Barron says, how interesting that it changed now that immigrants are people of color.
I think that's an overly simplistic interpretation of what happened. Now, that said, look, I'm not an expert historian on what the evolution of the elimination of those voting rights were. But what I can say is today I don't support the proposal that Councilmember Barron has on the table.
Also in the news today, Governor Spitzer for casino gambling in the Catskills.
I saw that when I opened my door and had the Daily News and the New York Post staring me in the face.
Have an opinion?
I don't have an opinion yet. I need to understand it better. I worry about expanding gambling, just because I worry about that gambling can have a negative effect on society overall. But I don't know the specifics about the situation in the Catskills. And I certainly applaud the governor's attempts to try to do everything he can to help the upstate economy, which is in dire, dire need of help. So I'm going to hold off an opinion on that, too.
You are the first openly lesbian speaker.
Yes.
But it seems to be a non-issue around town, as far as I could tell. Is that a sign of progress?
I think the fact that people judge me on how well or how poor a job they think I'm doing and not on my gender or my sexual orientation is absolutely a sign of progress. Now, you can't take that and extrapolate that there is no more sexism and there is no more homophobia in society. But I think it's an important step forward that people, the vast, vast majority of New Yorkers and my colleagues are judging me on whether they think I'm doing a good job or not. And that's all anybody can ask for.
Nancy Pelosi didn't call you for advice?
She did not. But funny enough, I got sworn in on January 4th and so did she. So if there's women listeners out there and you're looking for something good to happen, do it on January 4th.
Our next guest is John Amici,
yeah,
now the first NBA player to come out as gay, drawing hateful comments from Tim Hardaway, among others. Have you been following his coming out story?
I have, and it's really extraordinary, and he deserves a tremendous amount of credit. You know, I'm lucky enough to be an openly gay person in politics, and I follow Tom Duane and Deborah Glick and so many other people who, David Rothenberg, other people who
paved the way.
And in this case, in sports, there's so few openly gay people, particularly openly gay men. So he's really blazing a trail, and I just hope he remembers that there'll be people, or hope he knows that there'll be people like me 10 years from now who will owe their success and their comfort in themselves to him and everything he's having to bear.
10 seconds. Are you running for mayor in 2009?
All I'm running for right now is the second year of Speaker of the City Council and trying to do it better than I did the first year.
New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn. Thanks a lot. John Amici next.